ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम्। रघुपतिराघवराजाराम् पतितपावनसीताराम् रघुपतिराघवराजाराम् पतितपावनसीताराम् केशवमाधवराजाराम् पतितपावनसीताराम् केशवमाधवराजाराम् पतितपावनसीताराम् राम राम जय राजाराम् राम राम जय सीताराम् राम राम जय राजाराम् राम राम जय सीताराम् राम 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 सीताराम राम 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 सीताराम राम 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 सीताराम राम 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 सीताराम राम 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 ॐ सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। I have analyzed thoroughly, very clearly, all that I want to accomplish in life, or one can say, if we analyze all that a human being wants to accomplish, definitely we arrive at this fact that we are choicelessly seeking through all that we want to achieve. We are choicelessly seeking one thing, that is absolute permanent peace. Therefore, there are people who teach meditative techniques in order to quieten the mind. They think mind being peaceful means putting the mind to rest or putting the mind to sleep, or putting all the thoughts to sleep. In fact, putting the mind to sleep, or putting the thoughts to sleep, resolving the thoughts, is not really the absolute peace. It may be a relative peace, like our sleep. In sleep also, we are peaceful. Unfortunately, we are peaceful not knowing we are peaceful. If we try to attain peace by putting the mind to sleep or resolving the thoughts through the practice of meditation, the peace that we enjoy will be as good as the peace we have in our sleep. You're enjoying the peace not knowing you are peaceful. In fact, we want to be peaceful knowing we are peaceful. Another difference? Do you want to be peaceful knowing you are peaceful, Or do you want to be peaceful not knowing you are peaceful? We want to be peaceful knowing we are peaceful. Which means whatever is the situation outside, whatever is the lot I go through in life, that need not affect my peace at all. Every small thing can shake you in life. If nothing should shake me, whatever is the situation, my tranquility, my serenity should be maintained. Is it possible? Our shastras say that is possible. Absolute serenity, absolute tranquility, or absolute peace of mind is possible irrespective of where you are, how you are, when you are, whatever is the situation we go through. What do I need to do for that? That is why we always try to do something to earn that. And our Shastram says, you need not do anything for absolute peace. Should I do some pranayama? Should I do some practice some meditation, mental activity? Or should I do some physical exercises, yoga asana? Should I do some service? Should I do that? Should I do this? What should I do for this? This is what we ask always. We are all very much inclined to do something or the other. What Shastram says? Only one thing that does not require anything by you. You need not do, you need not do anything at all for that. What? Absolute peace. Peace is one thing you need not do anything at all. What does it mean? Why you need not do anything at all? Because already peace is there. Where is the peace? Peace is your very nature. Shanta Swarupaha Atma. Undisturbed, non-disturbable. In fact, I don't know whether such expression is correct. Peace is, if at all, something which cannot be disturbed at all, that is Atma. It is yourself. You are Shantihi yourself. You are of the nature of Shanta, peace. How can you have that peace? You are peace means that peace can really be there only if there is fullness. Even though your nature is peace already, you are of the nature of peace, your swarupam is shanta, your shanta swarupaha, but still there is disturbance, there is no shantihi. Opposite of shantihi is what? Ashantihi. Ashantihi means what? Restlessness, agitation, distraction, mental disturbance. Ashantihi. Why there is ashantihi if my nature is shanti? Ashantihi will be there if there is fullness. If there is inadequacy, there will be, if there is fullness, there will be shantihi. If there is ashantihi, there is no fullness. Which means, If there is no fullness, what will there be there? There will be only sense of inadequacy. If there is sense of inadequacy or sense of smallness, then you can't help being disturbed, being distracted, being agitated, being restless. They go together. Sense of inadequacy and restlessness or agitations and mental disturbance go together. If there is no sense of inadequacy, then there will be tranquility. Which means if there is fullness, there is tranquility, peace. If there is sense of inadequacy, there is ashanti. Kutra shantihi, kutra ashantihi. Where is ashanti, where is shanti? If there is fullness, there is shanti. If there is inadequacy, if there is smallness, there is ashanti. Ashanti means restlessness and agitation and disturbance. It is not wrong to be disturbed. It is not sin to be disturbed and agitated and restless. It is very natural for the human mind to be disturbed and agitated. But we want to be peaceful. So here Shastram says, where is the sense of inadequacy? Where is the sense of smallness? The sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy being centered on I. This is the fundamental problem. We never recognize, we all have problems, but we do not see, acknowledge, recognize our problems. Therefore, we cannot find the solution for our problems also. Our Shastram says, you are fullness, you are peace. The absolute peace you want is yourself. The fullness which is required for the peace to be there is also already your nature. In spite of that, why there is disturbance? Why? Because there is sense of inadequacy. The sense of inadequacy or sense of smallness, I'm repeating, it's very important. Because we don't understand where exactly the problem lies. And the sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy is centered on I. What does it mean? When I say the sense of smallness or sense of inadequacy is centered on I, this sense of inadequacy or smallness being centered on I is the fundamental problem. This is the basic human problem. Without recognizing, understanding what this problem is, you cannot find the solution. Leaving this one problem alone and you try to do so many things for peace and happiness and fullness, this problem will continue to be there. Having this problem comfortably in here, what is that? I am small, I am inadequate, I am small in terms of what? I am small in terms of physical personality, looks. I am small in terms of knowledge. I am small in terms of position in life. there are people who enjoy much higher positions in life. I'm not like that. In terms of position, I'm small in terms of possession. She has 5 houses. I don't have in 1 house. In terms of possession, in terms of looks, in terms of manpower, in terms of money power, in terms of influence, I'm small in terms of so many things. I'm small in terms of academic performance and qualifications. There are much more academically highly qualified people. I'm small. So I'm small, I won't give a big list, okay? You all know. I am small. You can say, no, I don't have such a feeling. You may say. When you come to say that, I said that itself is expression of smallness only. I don't have any problem. We here don't need to feel shy. You know why? This is a common human, universal, common human fundamental problem. Irrespective of whether you're European, Asian, American, or African, doesn't matter. You're a human being, it's enough. It's a common, universal, common human basic problem. I am small. I am inadequate. I'm not adequately rich or adequately good, I'm not adequately. We can add so many things. This problem is centered on I am small. This notion is very well rooted in the mind, and keeping this problem here in the mind, not that you want to have it, you are helplessly, naturally, choicelessly, you are having this problem. It's like no sick person, when he goes to the doctor, he can say, now I wanted to have this headache, so I had it, and I'm really intolerable, so I come to you now. Will you tell the doctor? Even doctor will not believe. The doctor cannot question, come on, why did you have headache? He cannot question you, nor can you say that I have it. It's not that you wanted to have it, or not that the doctor can ask you like that. Why? Because it's something natural, physical problem. Which, because of some disorder in the condition, it causes in the system. If everything is in perfect order, then there's no headache. If some disorder somewhere goes wrong, then it comes. Similarly, in emotional also, I am small, I am inadequate is a notion that every human mind entertains in the form of a thought. It is sitting there, the thought, the problem is there. Now that we want to have it, it is a natural, a human emotional problem. We think people have emotional problems. I tell you, this is the basic problem. Understand? It's a common problem. Like common cold, this is common problem. And this is the problem, fundamental problem. Instead of knowing this problem, you keeping this problem, you go and practice meditation. Whether you focus attention on Ramanama, or some other mantra, or meaningless mantra, or meaningful sound, or some sound, or you go for any type of meditation, doesn't matter. As long as you're practicing that meditation, you're focusing attention on some given object of meditation, and as long as your attention is drawn by that object of meditation, and you are seemingly peaceful, you're not really peaceful, your attention has been completely grabbed from you to place it somewhere else, for which you may have to pay also more money, And when you come back, you are back to square one, same old, again there's a disturbed mind. People don't understand that. So you don't practice anything else now. You go for any number of yogas or anything, whatever you do. Having this problem, whatever you do, will not remove this notion that I am small. Before, without practicing meditation, you had the notion, therefore you were restless. Now, after practicing meditation, along with the practice of meditation, you continue to have this notion. Therefore, you continue to be restless. The Shastra says, this problem is a common problem and this has to be, and is it real? Are you really inadequate? Are you really small? If you are really small and inadequate, this smallness centered on I cannot be changed. You can never become bigger than what you are. If you're really small, means you'll ever be small. If you're really inadequate, you'll ever be inadequate. But fortunately, you are not small. You are not inadequate. Then what about what is this? I am small, I am inadequate. What about this notion then? It is only a notion. Why is this notion there? This I am small, I am inadequate, I am unhappy, I am a mortal. This wrong notion you entertain about yourself is because of your erroneous, perception, self-perception. And because of the erroneous self-perception, what you do? You mistake the body, physical body, which is an object of knowledge, for the self. You mistake the sense powers for the self. You mistake the powers of organs of actions for the self. You mistake the mind for the self. You have I sense in the body, I sense in sense powers, you I sense in the mind, you I sense in your intellect, you I sense in your physiological functions. You have I sense all over this body, mind, sense complex. Not only one thing you mistake. And not only that, you mistake them for the self, not that you want to mistake them, so naturally, helplessly, you mistake. Okay? This is what now. Mistake the non-self for the self, the body mind complex for the self, and not only that, you superimpose the limitations of this non-self upon the self. Body is subject to limitations, mind is subject to limitations, all the sense powers subject to limitations. All these limitations of the non-self are superimposed upon the self. The superimposition also is not intentional, but it is natural. Not that you want to take. It's because of this, the erroneous self-perception leads to the superimposition of limitations of the non-self upon the self. And thereby, you have the wrong notion that I am small, I am inadequate, I am a limited individual. And this erroneous self-perception is because of self-ignorance. You may think I'm repeating today. I'm purposely repeating just to make you understand how important it the knowledge is. You have to see today the knowledge being the only solution for your problem. Understand? It is the knowledge. It is self-ignorance. Even ignorance, not that you wanted to be ignorant. See, because you also avoid, you have to avoid self-condemnation also. All the time guilt. All the time guilt. Don't add even a tinge of guilt to guilt here. You don't need to be guilty at all. It is, there's no intention. Listen, you wanted to be ignorant. Ignorance is natural. Ignorance is natural. Therefore, self-ignorance is natural. And the innocence is so natural that being ignorant of ignorance is natural. Therefore, what happens? Helplessly, the error in perception of the self also is very natural. First of all, free yourself from the guilt. Very natural. Therefore, this mistaking the non-self for the self, which means erroneous self-perception is natural, means that the superimposition of limitations of non-self upon the self, taking the body's limitations as my limitations, taking the mind's limitations as my limitations, taking the problems of the body means compress my problems. This is called superimposition. Do you do physically anything here? Tell me. Nothing is physically done. The superimposition of limitations of the body, mind, complex upon the self is not a physical activity, isn't it? Isn't it? And because of the superimposition, the notion you entertain about yourself, the self-image you have about yourself is wrong. That erroneous notion you entertain about yourself is the problem. Therefore, for peace and for happiness, for peace you need fullness, happiness. Being unhappy, you cannot be peaceful. Being peaceful implies being happy. Being happy implies being full. Being full implies not being inadequate, not being small. Not being small, not being inadequate is not being big. And bigness is what? Your nature. Limitlessness is your nature. Fullness is your nature. Happiness is your very nature. Therefore, if your nature is fullness, limitlessness and happiness, all that you need is you need to claim the fullness as your own nature. You need to take ownership of the fullness, limitlessness, happiness as your very nature. In claiming which, you will have only peace, nothing else. If you claim fullness as your nature, you have peace. Unless and until you claim fullness being yourself, your very nature, you cannot be peaceful. How can you claim fullness as your nature? All that you need to do is you correct the error in the notion you have about yourself. correction of error in the notion you have about yourself is so important. You need not do anything else. My God, we try to do so many things. Shastram says, problem lies here. This is the problem and this is the solution. What is the solution? Correction of error in the notion you have about yourself. I am small. That small has to be taken away. I am limitlessness must be the corrected notion. I am bigness. I am happy. I am unhappy. Should be corrected. I am happiness. I am inadequate. Must be corrected. I am fullness. So the corrected notion, the revised notion, isn't it? Perception of the self. And for which, do you not do anything here? You need not do anything. For that, all that you need is, you need to correct the perception of the self. And when you correct the perception of yourself, do you need to do anything? No. What? Always we try to do something. No. You need to resolve the self-ignorance. What should you do to resolve the ignorance? You need not do anything. You need to know yourself. Understand? You need to know yourself. This is the Vedanta Dindimaha. This is the declaration of Veda, know thyself. No, Vedanta Dindima means like Vedanta drums, make know thyself. No, really it drums. You know why? Why? You need to not do anything, you need to know yourself. Know thyself. Know. You know you are very fortunate. Why? You are qualified to know what you are. Which other being in the world is, this creation is as fortunate as you human being are. You know you are, you need to know what you are. That is your job. You are born here, people talk, say, you are born to win. I tell you, there is no victory other than knowing what you are. What you are going to win? What are you going to achieve by winning anything else in life? Even if you win, even if you think you are a winner in many respects, you may be a winner. And being a winner, still is as good as being a non-winner only. No way. Because the sense of inadequacy will not be resolved. Whether you're a winner or a loser, still the sense of inadequacy will continue to be there. Unless and until it is resolved. Can you do something? If that effort, this notion has to be corrected, and for which ekaha eva margaha, how many paths lead it to the same goal? Tell me, how many paths are there now? People talk about many, many paths lead to one goal. How many paths are there? What is your goal? Your goal is very clear. Goal is absolute peace, isn't it true? Ask any human being, what is your goal? What do you want to accomplish ultimately? What do you want to achieve ultimately? I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. People can give you big, highly, highly, highly ambitious people full of energy. They can give you big list of things. I want to become the number one world in the world in the field of information technology industry, or I want to become the number one in science discoveries, I want to in scientific account discoveries or technological improvements. You can, I want to be number one, number one, number one. Ultimately, what do you want anything for? Ultimately, any human being has to come down to this thing and have to say, I want to be peaceful. When do you want to be peaceful? Always. Where do you want to be peaceful? Everywhere. With whom do you want to be peaceful? Of course, everybody. I don't want to be, you know, unhappy with anybody, which means that being peaceful, absolute peace, that's why shanti, shanti, you know. We want the peace means there is the peace. Where there is dukkham, there cannot be peace. Where there is no inadequacy, there cannot be peace. Therefore, it is the happiness. If there is happiness, there is peace. If there is fullness, there is peace. If there is inadequacy, there cannot be peace. So if you want absolute peace, you need to be fullness, not full. You need to be fullness yourself. And for you to be fullness, you need to take ownership of your nature being fullness. That is possible only when you know what you are. Therefore, if goal is absolute peace in the form of the fullness or happiness, then for that only one means knowledge. Not many paths. Knowledge is the means. Knowledge is the way. In fact, knowledge, first I attain self-knowledge, then happiness will come, then peace will come. No, there's no then. Knowledge is happiness. Happiness is peace. They're identical. Therefore, attainment, you can never attain yourself. You can never attain. In fact, you need not attain yourself. Why should the wave make effort to attain the water? When is the wave not the water? Wave is always the water. Not a fraction of a second wave is not the water. Always wave is nothing but water only. Similarly, you are always yourself, the fullness, happiness, peace. You can never, you are the reality yourself. You are Param Brahma yourself. You are never not the reality. Therefore, you cannot attain yourself. You can never attain the truth or the reality of the universe. All that you can do is you can attain the knowledge of the self. Atma Praptihi, Brahma Praptihi is not possible. But Atma Jnana Praptihi, Brahma Jnana Praptihi is possible. Understand? Knowledge of the self has to be attained. Knowledge of the reality in the form of the knowledge of the self alone has to be attained. One thing you have to remember, you can never attain the knowledge of the truth or the reality of the universe without having the knowledge of the self. In fact, self-knowledge is equal to knowledge of the truth of the universe. Knowledge of the truth of the universe is what? Knowledge of what fullness is, what happiness is. Knowledge of what happiness is, in fact, knowledge of what peace is, what silence is. And knowledge is, attainment of knowledge is attainment of moksha. Understand? Therefore, self-knowledge and happiness, attainment of moksha are identical. Therefore, initially we say self-knowledge is the means and moksha, freedom from limitations or happiness is the end. First we say knowledge is the sadhanam and moksha is the sadhyam. Sadhyam means what? That to be accomplished. That which is to be accomplished is sadhyam. And the means to accomplish that end is called means sadhanam. So first we say between jnanam and moksha there is sadhana sadhya sambandha. But later on we say the means itself is the end. Knowledge itself is moksha. See, I'm preparing you slowly. I'm taking you step by step. Hope you're seeing it. Now, what is your end if you say, moksha is my ultimate, moksha is the choiceless ultimate, the common human ultimate end. Once it is clear, then now you can say what? Knowledge of the reality is the ultimate end. So what? Knowledge of the self is the ultimate end. Now, Atma Jnanam Jivana Lakshyam. The ultimate goal of living this life is the self-knowledge. Now you can say self-knowledge is identical with what? Knowledge of the truth of the universe, knowledge of what happiness is, what fullness is, knowledge of what God is, who the God is. What we mean by the word God or Lord. Without understanding the truth, without understanding the truth of one's own self, there's no way of correctly understanding even the concept of Lord. Concept you can understand, but really, Lord, God. Okay, therefore, now we say lakshyam, lakshyam or dhyayam. Dhyayam means what is to be focused on all the time. What are you focused on? Dhyayam. What is to be focused? What should be your focus should be always on what? Your ultimate goal. Your lakshyam, dhyayam, your goal, the end must be very clear. As a human being, you have to think very well, is there anything other than moksha, discovery of moksha? No. Now you know, self-knowledge is the ultimate end of life. When can you say that? If knowledge and moksha are identical, you have to understand, we are not at all interested in self-knowledge. We are not at all interested in knowledge of the truth. We are interested in our peace and happiness. Therefore, this is the end. Understand? If this is very clear, then you can say you have purushartha nischayaha. Purushartha nischayaha. Today you might have thought Swamini has repeated many things. Why I repeat this? Without this basic understanding, because otherwise you will lose interest half the way. People will lose interest in Vedanta. Not that I want to retain your interest. I want you to see the fact. Vedanta study must be a serious study. It is not like people go for katha kalakshepams, go for some entertainment program. Or it is not even an intellectual it's not an intellectual pursuit. People think it's sort of, it gives them status. No, it is your life. It is your commitment. Therefore, this is the Purushartha Nischaya. Purushartha Nischaya means being doubtlessly definite about the purpose of living this human life is the discovery or to discover the happiness, the fullness, the absolute peace which is already there as one's own real nature. Okay, when this Purushartha Nischaya is there, then you will ask this question, how can I know the truth? And which I have earlier explained, that is where you have Shastram as the Pramanam and you have teacher who can teach you also. With the help of the teacher, you make use of the Pramanam, the means of knowledge, the Shastram, and you can, when you are with the Shastram, regularly, systematically, with the commitment and with the faith, Shraddha is very, very important. The Sanskrit word Shraddha is much more than the word faith. It's more expressive than the word faith. But because of want of expression, I have to say Shraddha means faith. I say that. No, it means unflinching faith in the words of the scripture, the Shastram, Vedanta Shastram. We should have, with that Shraddha, when you really study the Shastram, then the Shastram has so much to contribute, give you. Without Shraddha, if you study, Shraddha is, the faith is something which you cannot impose on another person. One has to see this. So have Shraddha, then be with it. How a patient has to have Shraddha in the words of the doctor. Even the patient is not informed of the effect, how effective the medicine is going to be, etc. But still, he has to trust. The patient should trust the doctor and have the medicine, only even for him to know whether the medicine is effective or not. So also here, our Shraddha in the Shastra must be total. Total surrender must be there. Isn't it? How the patient surrenders himself when he goes to a surgery in an operation theatre. This total surrender. They are going to knock you off anesthesia and then they work on you. Surrender. Isn't it? Similarly, here also the surrender to the Shastram is very much important. Then the Shastram can work on you. That is very important. And here, as a person, one has surrendered to the Shastra means, then lifestyle must definitely change. Lifestyle must change. How I live my life must change. Without changing the lifestyle, simply I am studying Shastra. I want to live the way I want to live, but I want to study. I can go to any university, pay some fees, attend some classes, appear for exams, get my certificate and come out as a qualified person. That is possible with reference to any other worldly knowledge. But with this Shastram, the lifestyle has to go with the teaching of the Shastram. Lifestyle means what? Then we talk about the disciplines. And here, if a discipline is forced on you, oh come on, you have to live a disciplined life, if we say, oh my God, discipline, without knowing the importance of discipline, living a disciplined life, not knowing the value of disciplines, if simply you're asked to live a disciplined life means, then you feel burdened. It's a very burden. But knowing the value and knowing the importance of disciplines, when you start following disciplines, it is a joy. Understand? That is why Shastram, in the context of Shastram, disciplined life means, what is disciplined life? What do I mean by that? Let me see. So here, that is why we saw in the last class, first thing here is living a life of karma yoga, which we have already seen. Living a life of karma yoga, we have seen that. And living a life of karma yoga means, I talked a few things there, like entertaining an Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. Whatever actions we do, we perform all our duties, all our different roles we play, whatever we do in playing different roles, all our actions are attitudinally offered to Bhagavan, offered to the Lord. And I said, you see that all our actions are governed by our knowledge of right and wrong. Our actions are not governed by our likes and dislikes. Of course, our actions are impelled by our desires. No doubt. Nobody in the world can question you. Our actions are expressions of our desires. Our actions are impelled by our desires, our needs. No doubt. You are doing your actions to fulfill your desires, to fulfill your needs, no doubt. At the same time, those actions we perform to fulfill our desires must be governed by our knowledge of right and wrong. Which means our actions must be in conformity with the values, universal values. Which means our actions are governed by our knowledge of right and wrong. Means our actions are not governed by only by our likes and dislikes. Then I said, whatever comes in life also, certain attitude we need to have, that whatever comes is in life is prasadaha. We have to remain the same in all situations. Means, you are not compelled to remain the same in all situations. Remaining the same is something naturally you develop. You inculcate, you learn to remain the same in all situations. How? By seeing that as prasada, gift from the Lord, I said. Which means, how can you see that as a gift? By understanding another subtle fact. All the situations in our life are governed by, determined by the natural laws. And it is the Lord alone is in the form of natural laws, which determine the situations for us. Therefore, you have to see that as, once you understand, Lord is in the form of natural laws. And these natural laws alone determine our situations. Therefore, the laws ordained situations are Lord ordained situations. Therefore, I see anything and everything which comes in life, failure after failure, pain after pain, defeat after defeat, so many problem after problem in life. My God, I cannot breathe. So many things, unhappy situations, unpleasant situations, I had to put up with so much in life. Whatever comes, it is a gift from the Lord. Why? Because they are ordained by the natural laws, and the Lord is in the form of laws. I told you all these things earlier, but today I want to tell you one thing. You talk, yes, we understood everything, but we are talking about the Lord, Lord, Lord. You are talking about the Lord all the time. What do you mean by Lord? We have to understand Lord. That is why Karma Yoga may be a little difficult for us to live. Because Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, Ishvara Prasada Buddhi, what do you mean by Lord? So, today my idea, next thing is, Actually, I'm going to start talk about the concept of Lord. That's why I developed it today so much. Even though I didn't connect what I said taught last class, today I want to introduce that. In all the religious cultures, we worship the Lord. In all the religions, there is something called praying to the Lord, or worship of the Lord, or worshipping the Lord. Prayer and worship are common universal features in all the different religious cultures. And whomever you ask, they say, who do you pray to? Whether a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu, anybody will say, I pray to the Lord, pray to God, or I worship the Lord, they'll say. So we also say that. And here I tell you, if you ask, where is the Lord? The answer will be, where the Lord is not. Which is the Lord? Which is not the Lord here? Who is the Lord? Who is not the Lord here? Why? Because we say there is no Lord other than the reality. With reference to the ocean, there are only two things. One is water, the H2O, plus name and form ocean. Anything else? First you say two, then reduce the two into one. When you see the ocean, how many things do you see there? What all the things are you seeing there? You will say water, the H2O, plus minus water, what is there in the ocean? The form, plus what? Name. There cannot be name without a form. The form cannot be without the water. Therefore, what is there is only the water. Water alone is there in the form of ocean and with the name ocean. So name and form are non-substantial. Why? Because name and form cannot be counted as a second thing. Water, the H2O, is one thing, one substance. Name and form, ocean, cannot be said to be a second substance, a second thing. No. Why can't we say the name and form are second thing? Because if the ocean, the name and form ocean has to be counted as a second thing, it must have independent existence. After removing the water, if the name and form ocean can exist independently without the water, then we can say name and form can be counted as a second thing. Therefore, because the name and form ocean has no independent existence, it has no countability. Because it cannot be counted as a second thing, it is non-substantial. It is not non-existent, but it is as good as non-existent. We have to say now what? Water alone is there. Water is the secondless, non-dual substance appearing in the form of ocean. Is it clear? Therefore, the whole ocean, all the waves, all the movements of the waves, all of them are only one substance called water. Therefore, we say with reference to ocean, the Lord of the ocean is the water. If the Lord of the ocean is water, I don't say water is the Lord. You know, I say the Lord of the ocean is water. Why? Because water does not say I am the Lord. Therefore, I say Lord of the ocean is water. Now I tell you, water is not the ocean. Water is not the waves. But the entire ocean is water. Every wave is water. All the waves are water. Therefore, we say, water, the Lord of the ocean is water. The entire ocean is water. Therefore, entire ocean is, let's say now, the water, the Lord. With reference to ocean, example. Now we'll come to this universe. What is, therefore, the reality. The reality without which the name and form universe, my God, innumerably countless forms and names, the five elements, the elementals, living beings, non-living things, mobile beings, immobile beings, all of them are what? As good as the name and form. So gross, substantial forms. You can count the waves relatively. So relatively countable. Absolutely you cannot count the waves. Similarly here, relatively we can count how many people are sitting here. How many cities are there? How many things are there? Absolutely. If one without one substance, the universe cannot exist. Without one substance, water, the substantive ocean will be meaningless. Without one substance, reality, the substantive universe, the cosmos will be meaningless. And that substance is the law, the reality is the Lord of the universe. Lord of the universe is the reality. There is no real Lord other than the reality. Therefore, reality is not the ocean, so not the universe. Reality is not the universe. Not any individual, not anything in this universe. But every small, big, known, unknown, subtle, gross, everything in this universe is reality. The entire universe is reality. Therefore, the Lord of the universe is reality. The entire universe is reality. Therefore, the entirety is the Lord. Reality alone appears in the form of the universe. Therefore, all that is here is only the Lord. There's nothing which is not the Lord here. In fact, Lord alone is. Everything is the Lord means the gross, tangible matter is Lord, subtle matter is Lord, elements are Lord, elementals are Lord, living beings are Lord, non-living things are Lord, all the functions are the Lord. All the actions are the Lord. The fruits of actions are the Lord. The experiences are the Lord. Experience of pains and pleasures, desirable and desirable situations are Lord. The laws, the natural laws which exist as part and parcel of the universe, they are also the Lord. There is nothing which is not the Lord. Your existence is within the realm of the law and order. My existence within the realm of the law and order. I tell you, every smallest, tiny ant or a microbe or any germ, any bacteria, any virus, existence of every tiniest thing also is within the realm of law and order. Nothing exists outside of the law and order. There is no situation arises which is not within the realm of the law and order. We may talk to each other, it is very unfortunate, it shouldn't have happened, my God, it's all wrong. We talk about whatever happens here is within the realm of law and order. And that law and order is not outside of the reality. When you understand what that reality is, as that, when you know what you are, by knowing what I am, when you understand what this universe is, what the reality is, you will understand that there is no law and order outside of that reality. And that therefore, the whole universe is just as the entire ocean full of waves is nothing but only reality called water. The whole cosmos, all the existing beings, existent things, living and non-living, and the law and order within the realm of which everything else exists is that Lord. So Lord is the universal whole, the law and order. Lord is the whole, the universal natural law and order. Lord is the whole, the universal natural law and order. Within the realm of which existence of everything is. That is why everyone's life is as significant as everybody else's life. No life here is, nobody's life is an ordinary life. Every life is, my life is as significant as yours. Yours is as significant as mine and anybody else's life. Therefore, you can't take any life for granted. Understand? Therefore, this is the important thing we have to understand. This is the first base. Initially, we understand this Ishvara as the universal natural law and order. And based on this understanding, we are going to discover the truth of the Lord, the whole, as the truth of one's own self. We are going to discover the truth of the Lord, the whole, as the truth of one's own self. Understand? That is why we say the whole universe is what? Macrocosmic being. Is Ishvara the Lord? And every individual is the microcosmic being. Every micro is part of the macro. Mahan Purushaha Paramatma, the whole. Therefore, once you understand Ishvara as the universal, Ishvara is the whole, the universal natural law and order. And everything is existing here within the realm of law and order. Then, now you can understand all the actions are performed. I offer it, I perform it with an attitude of offering it to the Lord, the whole. Then whatever comes also is determined by the natural laws which are the Lord. If I see them as the gift from the Lord, unchangeable, ordained, in conformity with my own previous actions, I see them as the gift from the Lord, therefore I accept them with sameness of mind. Which is very important for one. And for one to be able to live a life of karma yoga. See, living a life of karma yoga means it's something amazingly, amazing thing. Therefore, for one to be a karma yogi, you know, one needs tremendous amount of grace. It is not easy for one to be a karma yogi, to be able to live a life of karma yoga. Therefore, we need to be highly prayerful and worshipful. So being worshipful and prayerful, understanding Lord as the whole, the universal law and order, when you commit yourself to live a life of universal values, you have brought Ishvara, the Lord, in your life. Okay? In fact, this living a life of karma yoga means implies surrendering one's will to the law and order dharma, which means my actions are governed by dharma. My knowledge of right and wrong means I use my capacity to choose to do the action. Please don't get confused about people who are talking about the will being not there. It is very important, because I have to emphasize, the reason I've been hearing people make such a big fuss about this will. See, what we go through in our life, all what we go through in our life, everything is not governed by our will. But definitely, you have the willpower. That is what distinguishes a human being from the other living beings. Therefore, you have to use really exercise your will to choose to do the right action, to avoid the wrong action. Definitely, or to use the will to do the actions, which are governed by your knowledge of right and wrong, not by what others say. You know what is it and what is wrong. So your actions must be governed by your own knowledge of right and wrong. Then the actions are in conformity with dharma, in universal values. Then your will is surrendered to dharma. Surrendering one's will to dharma, the universal law and order, is surrendering one's will to Bhagavan, which is called surrender, relative surrender, sharanagatihi. Okay? In fact, the absolute surrender is only in knowledge. When you recognize yourself being the truth, of the truth, when you recognize yourself being identical with the Lord, the whole, from the standpoint of reality, that is absolute surrender. When you resolve identity with the Lord, the whole, Paramatma, when you lose your individuality in totality, knowing your real nature, that is absolute surrender. But until knowledge, when your actions are governed by your knowledge of right and wrong, which means yes, you will be surrendered to dharma, the law and order, that is relative surrender, sharanagati. Okay, we'll see in the next class. any queries, please ask me and then we'll answer. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.